Okay, you ready? You can hear me okay? Great, we're on. Perfect. Awesome. Let's go. I'm Peter Little, lead pastor at Christ Pacific Church in Huntington Beach, California. We're cultivating a community of faith, hope, and love that follows Jesus into the world. And you're listening to our Sunday Sermons podcast. To learn more about us or to subscribe to this podcast, visit us at cpchb.org. Thanks for listening.
The life of discipleship can only be maintained so long as nothing is allowed to come between Christ and ourselves. Neither the law, nor personal piety, nor even the world. The disciple always looks only to his master. Never to Christ and the law, Christ and religion, Christ and the world. He avoids all such notions like the plague. Only by following Christ alone can he preserve a single eye. His eye rests wholly on the light that comes from Christ and has no darkness or ambiguity in it. As the eye must be single, clear, and pure in order to keep light in the body, as hand and foot can receive light from no other source save the eye, as the foot stumbles and the hand misses its mark when the eye is dim, as the whole body is in darkness when the eye is blind, so the follower of Christ is in the light only so long as he or she looks simply to Christ and at nothing else in the world. Thus, the heart of the disciple must be set upon Christ alone. If the eye sees an object which is not there, the whole body is deceived. If the heart is devoted to the mirage of the world, to the creature instead of the creator, the disciple is lost. Worldly possessions tend to turn the hearts of the disciples away from Jesus. What are we really devoted to? That is the question. Are our hearts set on earthly goods? Do we try to combine devotion to them with loyalty to Christ? Or are we devoted exclusively to Him? Good morning, friends. That's Dietrich Bonhoeffer in a book that I recommend to you, The Cost of Discipleship. We're going to go on a little bit of a walk this morning as we talk about this passage that you have heard read and some of these words that Dietrich Bonhoeffer has said in light of those words. So join me, would you? It is an absolutely glorious morning. Things are going to be wiggling a little bit, but I trust that you can stick with me. You know, we tend to pay attention to whatever it is that we give our attention to. And I heard someone say once that what gets your attention ultimately gets you. And in these verses from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus is blessing us. Jesus is giving us some guidance. He's showing mercy on us. He is showing us how to live life free from anxious distraction. Isn't Jesus good? I love it. Jesus gives us four kind of brief stories or vignettes in these verses. And you know what? They're all like variations on the same theme. So first of all, Jesus talks to us about heavenly and earthly treasures. Then he talks a little bit about what we focus on. And then he talks to us about to whom we pledge our allegiance. And then he talks to us about anxiety. And he talks to us specifically about the anxiety that we experience when we store up for ourselves treasures in places where treasures just cannot be stored. He talks to us about the worry that we experience when We focus on the things that are not worthy of our focus. And he talks to us about anxiety that we experience when we pledge our allegiance to places or people who just don't deserve that kind of authority in our lives. So let's talk about these four vignettes, these four brief stories that Jesus tells us. So first of all, treasure. Do not store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Place treasures on earth, rather, where moth and rust and thieves destroy and break in and steal. He says, do not store up for yourselves. That's kind of the key there. You see, all the stuff that we have, it's actually all gifts from God. And the stuff that we've been given has been given to us to be put to use, not to be stored up, not to be hoarded, not to be collected and placed in our own personal museums for display, but rather to be used to bless others and to, in fact, enjoy. And you know, we need to be careful not to mishear Jesus here. We need to be careful not to put words in his mouth. He doesn't say that treasures on earth are to be avoided. He never says that. He says they are not to be stored up in places where they just cannot be stored. You know, the problem with storing up treasures on earth is that they're so susceptible to corrosion from just about every angle. That's the problem. I'm going to quote Dr. Dale Bruner. You've heard me quote him over and over again because, darn it, he is so worthy of quoting. But he talks about how when we store up treasures on earth, we're storing up treasures in a place where moth can corrode. And moth is like the corrosion of nature. And rust is like the corrosion of time. And thieves are like the corrosion of humanity. Nature, time, and humanity, they're all corrosive agents. And they make life lived for accumulation terribly insecure. Jesus says, invest your life in what God is doing. Because what God is doing is exempt from all of these corrosive agents. The reality is that wherever our treasure is, there our heart will be also. Our treasure can be lots of things, you know, not just material possessions, not just wealth. Our treasure can be our reputation. It can be our security. It can be our family. It can be our citizenship or our own personal branding. These are all actually good things. In fact, we might even say, that they're gifts from God. But when we make them into our heart's devotion, into our heart's treasures, then we make gods out of them. And they're just not intended to be gods. Do you remember when Jesus says that the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength? What he's saying is that the greatest commandment is to treasure God. To treasure him with all that you have. Hold God and his people dearest in your heart. And you know, our only wisdom, our only safety, and our only fulfillment lies in treasuring God this way. You see, when we treasure God, then we will also treasure our neighbors rightly. Just exactly the way that God treasures them. You know, when I was a little boy, I treasured my blankie. I imagine that many of you can relate to that. Or maybe not. Maybe it was just me. But I treasured my blankie. Man, I found security in it, comfort. I loved it. I always knew where it was. I was always keeping track of it in my mind. And anytime that I, you know, misplaced it or I couldn't find it, man, I would experience separation anxiety. Of course, that's not what I would call it when I was, you know, 4 years old or 6 years old when I was treasuring this blankie. But man, I treasured this thing. Eventually, the blankie wore out. The corrosion of time got to it. And thankfully, I grew out of my my attachment to this blankie. And, you know, sometimes you and I, sometimes we're like children and their blankies. You know, we outgrow our attachment to our blankies, just like I outgrew my attachment to my blankie. But we become attached to other things. We become attached to our image. We become attached to security. We become attached to other things. We become attached to what other people think of us. And we constantly keep track of these things. We keep track of our image. We keep track of what other people are thinking. We keep track of our material possessions. You know, what you treasure becomes the object of your heart's desire. It becomes the object of your heart's devotion. And the only object of devotion that can fulfill those desires of your heart is not actually an object at all, but a person. Jesus Christ, the Lord. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Jesus says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. Your eyes tell your feet where to go. If you see, well, then your whole body will be well directed. But if you can't see, you're going to be stumbling around in the dark. Did you guys see the article this week where this 5-year-old boy was pulled over by police in Utah? He had been swerving all over the road, and so police were suspicious, and for good reason. So they pulled him over and discovered this 5-year-old boy who was driving his parents' SUV, and he was on his way to California to purchase a Lamborghini with the $3 that he had in his pocket. And the problem was that this boy had not learned some of the basics of driving, which is one of the main basics of driving well, is that you need to look out into the distance, not right in front of the car. When you look right in front of the car, when you focus on what is immediately in front of you, then what happens is you end up responding erratically to inconsistencies in the road and in potholes, and you end up swerving all over the place. But when you focus on the road farther out ahead of you, then you get a better perspective. You're actually able to see better. The point is that your focus determines the way you go. Where you look determines the course of your life. So the question is, where is your focus? You know, what are you looking at? What is filling your eyesight? Are you focused on the potholes right in front of you? Or are you looking at the big picture? The big picture being painted by God. Jesus goes on and he says, you know, no one can serve two masters. You can't serve God and mammon. That word mammon just refers to material goods, and probably more specifically, the insatiable pursuit of material goods or wealth. And Jesus says that you can't serve both God and mammon. But don't we wish that we could? You know, I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, don't we wish that we really could just serve both? I mean, there are those in the world who really have no interest in serving both God and mammon. They are perfectly happy pledging their allegiance to mammon alone. But if you're a disciple of Jesus, you know that this just is not the way, that this just will not do. but plenty of us, I think, are actually attempting to pledge our allegiance to God, to serve God as our master, but then also to moonlight on the weekends for this pseudo-god called Mammon. But Jesus says, that's impossible. You just can't do that. Why? Why not? Why can't you do that? Well, the reality is that the pseudo-god Mammon has a tremendous gravitational pull. Mammon exerts exceptional force, and it pulls us out of orbit around Jesus Christ and pulls us to itself, to an orbit around itself. And we cannot simultaneously be in orbit around God, around Jesus Christ, and also around this God named Mammon. When Mammon pulls us in, when the pursuit of material gain pulls us in, we are no longer orbiting Jesus Christ. You know, in one single verse here in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus uses the words not possible twice. Two times he underscores that it is not possible to serve both God and Mammon. One New Testament commentator makes the point this way. He says, the marching orders of God and Mammon are in entirely different directions. I think Jesus here is talking about allegiance. To whom do you pledge your allegiance? Krista and I lived in British Columbia for 7 years, and in hindsight, we could have applied for and gotten Canadian citizenship. And doing so wouldn't have required us to renounce our American citizenship. We could have become dual citizens. And Jesus says that dual citizenship in the kingdom of God and in the kingdom of wealth accumulation, dual citizenship like that is just not possible. To pledge allegiance to the kingdom of God, and more specifically, to pledge allegiance to the King, King Jesus, means that we must deny our allegiance to Mammon. So how do you pledge allegiance to God alone, especially if you can feel the gravitational pull of Mammon, the pursuit of gain, if you can feel it pulling at you? Well, you know, Jesus tells the rich young ruler to sell all that he has and give the proceeds to the poor. Now, I'm not sure, actually, no, I am sure. I am sure that Jesus is not saying that all of us, therefore, are called to sell all we have and give all of the proceeds to the poor. That is an untenable situation. But the reason he told the rich young ruler that was because the gravitational pull of wealth in this rich young man's life was so strong that the only way he could escape its orbit was to exert a kind of force that would only happen if he actually sold everything he had. You know that rich young man? He went away sad that day because he was not willing to center his life on Jesus Christ rather than on his riches. And so his life would continue to revolve around Mammon and, in fact, be marked by worry. Isn't that interesting? If you read that passage, you see that the reason the man approached Jesus in the first place was because he was worried. He was anxious. So Jesus has spoken to us here a little bit about treasure. He's talked to us about what we focus on. He's talked to us about to whom we pledge our allegiance. And these are all variations on the same theme, the theme of treasure. Where our treasure is where our hearts will be also. And then Jesus says, do not worry about your life. Do not worry about your life. Jesus knows that if we treasure what is susceptible to so much corrosion, that we will live a life marked primarily by worry. If we try to serve God and also moonlight for the God or pseudo-God Mammon, he knows that ultimately we're going to be worried. He says, do not worry. Do not worry about your life. And then he offers us the antidote to worry. It's super simple. It comes in the form of three commands. Look at the birds. Consider the lilies. And strive first for the kingdom and his righteousness. Really, Jesus? This is your solution? Just look at the birds? Really? You might be worried about your annual bonus this year because your annual bonus is a significant part of your financial plan with regard to retirement. And given the coronavirus, perhaps your annual bonus is in major question at this time, uncertain. It might be keeping you up at night, causing high blood pressure and leading to all kinds of tension in the home. And Jesus says, go look at the birds. Consider some flowers. Really, Jesus? Jesus, maybe you don't understand the pressures of modern day life. Maybe life in the first century was simpler, easier. And maybe you had time and space and you could just go consider the lilies or look at the birds. But you don't understand the pressures of modern day life. Or maybe Jesus understands exactly what the pressures of modern day life are. And maybe he knows exactly the antidote, the solution. He knows exactly what you need to combat the worry that you struggle with. Look at the birds. Stop. Stop the incessant activity. Look at the birds. Focus your eyes on them. Early Monday morning this week, I was sitting at our dining room table and the windows were open and all of a sudden this tremendous bird song just erupted outside of our windows. And it only lasted about 30 seconds and I'd never heard this kind of song before. It was like a whole choir of birds. I don't know if they were playing or fighting or what, but it sounded beautiful. And I thought how easily that could have been drowned out by the sound of my coffee grinder or lost in the sound of the news that I was reading that morning. But by God's grace, he drew my attention to that song. 30 seconds of beauty, 30 seconds of perspective gaining as a gift to me that morning. Stop, look, focus on the birds. The word that Jesus uses there means a lot more than just to look at or glance at. It means to seriously consider, to look closely at and try to understand. You know, it's kind of like when your mother used to say to you, look at me when I'm talking to you. You know, a glance or a blank stare will not do. You've actually got to look her in the eyes. You've got to put down whatever it is that you are doing and pay attention to her. Look at me when I'm talking to you. I think Jesus is saying, you know, I'm talking to you through the birds and through the lilies sometimes. Look at me when I'm talking to you. Jesus takes it a little bit farther and he says, consider the lilies. Consider the lilies of the field. Look intently at them. Understand them. Study them. Look, consider. Mostly, I think what Jesus is getting at here is to stop. To take your eyes off of the potholes that are directly in front of you. Take your eyes off the obstacles that are right in front of you and instead look into the distance. Look farther down the road. Gain some perspective. Gain some perspective on reality. Consider the lilies. The perspective that the Lord is the creator of the cosmos. That God actually invented beauty. That God extravagantly provides for even the simplest aspects of his creation. So much more then will he provide for you. I mean, the grass of the fields that he so marvelously dresses and decorates with the poppies in springtime, the super bloom of spring. You know, that grass, in just a few short months, it's going to be dead and brown. How much more will he clothe you? You who are the apple of his eye. You who are the pinnacle of his creation. You who are the unique creature in all of creation. The one to whom God has given his image to bear. So if God is that gracious and providing to the lilies, or to the fields rather, how much more will he provide for you? Listen, he says, strive first for the kingdom. You know, human nature is to strive first for my kingdom, to strive first for all that my purposes lead me to store up for myself treasure on earth and to serve this pseudo-god called mammon. Why? Well, for the sake of my own gain, for the sake of my own glory. And let's not dress that up and fool ourselves by saying, well, no, it's not for my own gain. It's for my children's gain. It's for the blessing of my children. You know what? Ultimately, it's for us, isn't it? Jesus says, strive first for the kingdom. Because striving for your kingdom always leads to worry. It always leads to anxiety. Because when you serve the pseudo-god mammon, you end up focused on the wrong things. You end up storing up for yourselves treasures that are susceptible to the corrosion of time, the corrosion of humanity, and the corrosion of nature. So treasure Jesus. That's what he's saying. Focus your eyes on Jesus. Pledge your allegiance to Jesus. And to help you do that, he's given you the gift of lilies and birds. And you know, I think if Jesus lived a mile from the Pacific Ocean, he would have said something like, consider the waves. Consider the tides. I think that there's a decent chance that if we considered the waves, if we considered the tides, that we could probably learn more about God's faithfulness from the waves and faithfulness from the tides just by looking at the ocean. We could probably learn more about God's faithfulness that way than we could listening to 1,000 of the finest sermons. Look at the birds. Consider the lilies. Take a walk on the beach. I'll close with an old Dolomite chant. Not so in haste, my heart. Have faith in God and wait. Although he linger long, he never comes too late. He never cometh late. He knoweth what is best. Vex not thyself in vain until he cometh, rest. Until he cometh, rest. Nor grudge the hours that roll. The feet that wait for God are soonest at the goal. Are soonest at the goal. That is not gained by speed. Then hold thee still, my heart, for I shall wait the Lord's lead.
Thanks for joining our Christ Pacific Sunday Sermon Podcast. To hear more of our sermons, or to subscribe, or to learn how you can be engaged with what we're up to in Huntington Beach, please visit us at cpchb.org.